My name is Frank Metzger, Frank Lake Metzger. I'm from Glen Carbon, Illinois, retired iron worker. And I own a small business functioning right now, and it's called Trees, Trees, and More Trees. The name of that, of course, was for the very fallacious male memory. Ladies can remember and look it up in the phone book. But for the men, it is Trees, Trees, and More Trees. I operate in three counties, and the men are working today. I was late for this interview because I had some problems that needed to be attended to personally before I set off on the road to come up here.
So we'll talk about, why did you want to run? This district was redrawn and included the Metro East area, including Madison County. Talk about some of the frustrations you're dealing with and why you felt this was
Jeff,
important.
Jeff, not only have you made my Christmas card list, but that is the perfect question. I'd love to see every candidate address immediately. In my case, as a sole proprietorship, I went to form an LLC with my attorney. I took one look at the regulations to find if I was as much as one day late, and I said, forget it, I'll risk a lawsuit. This is typical of specifically Illinois. Too many governmental regulations. We are strangling small business. Number two, it's also typical of most of the urban and suburban areas of these 50 United States of America. We have government in our back pocket. We've got them in our church pew with us. They're trying to silence what we say. Too much government. I'm a Jeffersonian at heart. That government is best which governs least. Now then, as far as background goes, 7 years ago, I tried to talk my sitting congressman, John Shimkus, into running for the United States Senate so I could backseat him right into his congressional spot. And each year for 7 years, my position was a little more aggressive, more to get down to it. Until this last year, I simply said, John, get off your butt and run for the Senate. He could not do that, and here is why. Said, Frank, I have two sons in high school, one in junior high. They need a full-time dad. For any Republican to win a statewide election in the state of Illinois, since none of us will ever win downtown Chicago, which should be our 51st state, by the way, little aside there, he said that he would almost have to live in and move into the suburbs just to get an effective voice out to all the people. Now then, in my personal background, my great-grandfather on my mother's side was Charles Voorhees, a United States senator from Pennsylvania. My father was, in fact, starting with local community school board, moving into county of Essex County. This is Caldwell, New Jersey, excuse me. And then Essex County, New Jersey, made it to the state house on his own dime. He didn't have much in the way of political backing, financial backing, where he served one term, then ran for governor. He was so unhappy with politics as usual. The financial supporters in his gubernatorial race were cut out from under him, with 24 men and four newspapers all backslapping, go ahead, go get it, Bob, you're the man we need. But when election time rolled around, 20 of those candidates had been, or financial supporters had been persuaded to invest their money elsewhere. Three of the four newspapers totally blacked him out. I was turned off to government and politics in these United States. Quit the university, bought a motorcycle. I was supposed to have been a family doctor or lawyer, not an iron worker. Bought a motorcycle, toured the country. Two tours in Vietnam really turned me around to the fact that we have the best there is in the world. And I owe my forefathers and founding fathers to myself get up and do something. At 70, I probably should be looking for a cane, a wheelchair, rocking chair, or a truckload of Depends, or all of them. But I'm not. I want to serve my country as I did in Vietnam for two tours.
Well, talk about what kind of support you have down in Madison County. I mean, would you term it as like a grassroots type campaign?
Well, this is definitely a grassroots campaign. My financing is 100% my own. Well, one exception. I had a 93-year-old lady who, shaking her little gray head at me, said, I have never voted Republican. I have never supported a Republican candidate. But would $200 help get your campaign started? Much to the amusement of my attorney, who himself is a rabid Democrat. So I am off on my own 100%. This money is coming from my iron workers' retirement funds. My wife is not very pleased with that. She has five major physical problems and is, in fact, handicapped. A good woman, but I see the bigger picture here. I need to be in Washington, D.C., where the gifts the Lord gave me, specifically a big mouth and, when necessary, a bad attitude, can be focused on the nation's problems. Now, lest you think I'm just a dumb iron worker here, my personal library has got 3,500 volumes, some of which are the envy of the University of Illinois Public Library and the public libraries down home. I can bring to bear and to focus, with that big mouth and bad attitude, an unsurpassed love of the Christian heritage of this great nation. I could walk into any secondary institution in this country, all 50 states, pick up teaching American history exactly where the last teacher left off because the kids grew them nuts and he quit. I can walk into any tertiary institution, predominantly the junior colleges, but also the four-year baccalaureate degree conferring in the higher institutions like U of I right here, and I could teach college level basic American history and advanced American history. But there, I've got to hit my voluminous library and get boned up.
So what's wrong with government now? What are your key couple of things that you want to get in there and shake up in Washington?
Hold me back before I give you a hug for asking that. Number one, the number one problem in this great nation is jobs which cannot be separated from the economy. We are looking now at an administration, not just United States administration, but locally as well, where the focus is on alternative energy sources. Buddy, I'm all for that. I'm all for research and development, but let's face it, with gas going out of sight and no end of that in sight, we need to develop every single type of resource we have in this country. Obama is blatantly not just anti-small business, he is anti-fossil fuel industry. Unequivocally stated, I don't care what words fall from his lips, read between the lines and look at the policies, look at his votes. Okay? There is no reason in God's green earth why that pipeline could not have been signed. That would have opened 10,000 on the spot American union jobs. Now, Mr. Obama wants to invest $4 billion in Brazil to develop their fossil fuel industries. For crying out loud, how about $1 billion here and $3 billion down there? Yes, we have our trade agreements, and yes, we've got to do this, that, and the other overseas. Get it home first. Now, we were told unequivocally by Mr. Durbin, Mr. Leahy, and good old Harry Reid in unison, the great triumvirate up there in the United States Senate. We were told, unmistakably, all issues were on the table to cut the budget and cut spending. That was a blatant lie, and he knew it when he said it. The lie was Planned Parenthood has never been on the table. Planned Parenthood is the world's biggest provider of abortions today. Now, that's another area we can get into another time. That is the number one problem, jobs in the economy. I would encourage, in fact, there should have been a 435 standing yelling going on in the House of Representatives to sign that pipeline and get her done. To go ahead and put $1 billion right now into our own energy resources. As far as the exploratory money wants to cut back on, look, people, it was only a decade ago that the greatest natural gas reserves was found by our own exploratory here in the United States. We need to develop all these, okay? We need to have our young people focus not on putting Band-Aids on stuff, but focus and using their voices to get their representatives on the ball. Mr. Durbin doesn't even talk to me anymore. I had his face red as a beet at Mid-America Airport when I went over to talk with him on his voting record only. I didn't throw any political double talk at him, and I didn't kiss his backside either. But I told him, here's your four voting issues I have a problem with. He was beet red and slathering droplets of saliva, the great tragedy. There was no media to record it. I've had dreams ever since of the Time Magazine, San Francisco Chronicle, Washington Post, Miami Herald, all these great newspapers showing Mr. Durbin, Senator Durbin, losing it when confronted by a poor, humble iron worker with his voting record.
So, yeah, what were the issues there? I mean,
thank you so much.
Yeah, you said four things that he...
Yes. Senator Durbin claims to be a Christian, yet he's voted for everything the abortionists have gone down the pike with. I don't know how much they're supporting him financially. He has, with no exception, he has been pro-abortion all the time. No indication of any feelings towards pro-life, yet he claims to be a Christian. Number two, in the homosexual arena, we all know, if we look at it, the hate crimes legislation didn't have a darn thing to do with hate crimes. It was all about muzzling the Christian right, people like me, so that we, if we spoke up, and there are two men serving time in Canada right now, preachers who quoted from the Bible from their pulpit and were yanked off that pulpit, tried and convicted of basically hate speech. I'm sorry, we don't need speech police in this country. What we need is adherence to the basic freedoms as outlined in the Constitution, the amendments thereof, and we need to keep the fact that this is a three-part government. We do not need an overpowering executive telling us how and what to think, when and where to change our light bulbs, what kind of gas we can use, what kind of car we can buy. I'm sorry, that's not in the Constitution. That is not the purview of the United States. What we need, again, is a return, and here's where the money comes in. Let's get the state-authorized programs back to the state. The Constitution is very specific. Any powers not specifically aligned to the federal government shall be reserved to the states, period. Education belongs in the states, period. I'm all for improving the standards of education, but you can't do it just by spending dollars. You got to get the NEA, which has this country by the neck in a stranglehold, and get them to fire the 5,000 teachers sitting in New York City in a padded room, basically paid full pay, full benefits, in a city that's almost bankrupt because they're not good enough to be in the classroom. How about Buffalo, New York was on the news last week. Was it 2,000 teachers or so? Let me see if I get my facts straight here. The city of Buffalo, New York, also virtually bankrupt, is required under the NEA contract to pay teachers for cosmetic surgery, liposuctions, facelifts, tummy tucks. Give me a break. They want them? Let them pay themselves. And yet the poor citizens of Buffalo are strapped because there is no contract and the teachers union has no desire to re-up the contract. Now, lest we make any mistake, I am a union iron worker, the preponderance of my adult life. I am a union iron worker and a good one. I only retired 2 years ago when an 8-inch beam got too doggone narrow and I had to get down before I fell down. But the construction unions are in good shape in this country. But we have the AFSCME, local employees, and we have the teachers' unions way, way, way out in left field. And I specifically said left field. They are not just liberal, they're socialist. And the demands they make on the taxpayers who support them are unrealistic, impractical, and they need to be addressed. Next question, please.
Well, you were just on the tail end of that. You talked a bit about the pipeline and creating jobs from that. What other things would you want to do to boost the economy, get people?
Well, I also mentioned the $4 billion he wants to spend in Brazil. Spend $1 billion of it right here, period. Stop the funding to Planned Parenthood. There's two aspects of this. The more you cut spending, the more you decrease the necessity of raising taxes, the more money is available. I come across a statistic that every penny the gas price rises at the pump takes $2 million out of everyday Americans' pockets. When you free up your middle class and your small businesses, suddenly you create jobs. Government oven by itself does not create jobs unless they're for government. Look at Washington, D.C., the highest paid per capita area of the country right now, even exceeding New York City. Okay? And they're government positions. Why did they have to double the number of IRS people? Because they're afraid that people that will not support Obama's health care are going to need to be monitored. Why did the IRS last week declare war on the Tea Parties internationally? Okay? Letters went out to virtually all the Tea Party demanding to know who their supporters are by name. This is an infringement of First Amendment rights. Why are we paying these people? Put them in the unemployment line. Give our government employees the same rates of pay for the same job the private sector does with the same benefits. Okay, I am not going to refuse my salary, but I'd like to point out I was 5 weeks into this campaign before I ever even asked what a congressman makes. My focus is the next election. Excuse me, that was backwards. My focus is the next generation. That's something you can bleep, Jeff. My focus is totally the next generation. I could care less about the next election. When I make it up there, if they don't like what I say and do, vote me out. I'll be 72, and I'll be ready for that rocking chair and cane and depends. But I am just grossly, grossly, grossly unhappy the direction my country has taken. Now we've talked about Band-Aids. Can we talk about the real problem?
Go ahead.
Let's go back to 1840. One of the greatest Europeans, Alexis de Tocqueville, toured this great nation by horseback, which was rough at his age, by steamboat, by stagecoach. 2 years touring this great nation, and I don't want to oversimplify this, but his body, he couldn't understand how this infant nation of country bumpkins and farmers and shopkeepers, how could they surpass Europe? with its 400 years of sophistication and invention and creativity as it came out of the Dark Ages to the time of our revolution. Mr. de Tocqueville's comment should be set in stone in every institution in this country. America is good because America is great. When America ceases to be good, so also will America cease to be great. The great strength of America, rural, urban, suburban, the great strength is in her families. When legislation detracts from the strength of those families, that detracts from the strength of America. I have a great, passionate love for the youth of this country. Never mind the fact that I have 7 kids of my own, 17 grandbabies, and believe it or not, a great grandbaby. But the great strength of America is in its youth. I obtained copies of the United States Constitution, 250 at a time. It started a few years back with just one or two here and there. I only give them to young teenagers, and every one gets a handwritten note on the cover. Of the 5 different pocket-sized editions I personally own, only one, the one picturing George Washington standing, and the reason I chose that is it has 5 pages of many quotes of our founding fathers. We got to fight attention time span of these young people. They got to focus fast and then use their own intellect to go to libraries and research. The second page of those quotes has this title, Observing the Hand of Providence. Do you know, in over 200 cases, not one teenager has ever been able to tell me what the hand of providence is? Do you know, Jeff? That's how our founding fathers referred to the hand of God. If you're a statistician, it was utterly impossible for George Washington and company to win that Revolutionary War. It could not have been done. That first bitter winner wasn't Valley Forge. It was Marstown, New Jersey. Those Patriots had 10 musket balls apiece, enough powder to get them down range. We use that in a 3-second burst in training today. Okay? They also, 1 out of 4 had boots. The rest had rags and burlap around their feet. The sacrifice of those founding fathers brings me to tears even today at 70 years of age. Now, I would add one more caveat here. Okay? The American Historical Association recognizes by name 300 founding fathers. May I point out 297 were Christians. May I further point out 2 were deists, meaning they believe in the same creator God, but the deist does not believe in the efficacy of prayer. May I point out, only one was an atheist, and his atheism caused his death. This man spoke powerfully years ago. It's required reading by all the troops. These are the times that try men's souls. Sunshine patriots and summertime soldiers, arise. Where is your love of liberty? Get off your dead butts and fight. Oh, wait a minute. The last part was mine. But Thomas Paine in Common Sense had the words of the day, the vernacular of the day, to express that sentiment. Stand up, be counted, fight for your rights and your liberty. It's no different today. That speech could have been delivered yesterday.
You said 2 military tours, right?
I did. Vietnam, yeah. 2 times.
Can you talk about policy on that and, what military spending, or what are your thoughts, what we've done in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Thank you
years?
Again so much. Boy, I couldn't have asked these questions better myself. I sat up for 3 nights dreaming them up. America's traditional strength has been through its military strength. Well, families first, of course, but governmentally speaking, our strength has always been through a good, strong military. Yeah, we were unprepared at the outset of World War I and II. Of course we were. That's because we weren't warmongering as it's pictured. Our strength is there. We do not need to be cutting at this point in history. The timing is critical here. This is the greatest. It's what a wonderful time to be alive, Jeff. You're half my age and you should be celebrating every day with joy. We need to keep a strong military because world events are such that only power is recognized by the Muslim community. I don't understand why all 435 members of our House of Representatives and all 100 senators haven't stood unanimously demanding that, number one, we do reaffirm and acknowledge Israel as an independent state, instead of Mr. Obama's press conference where he came right out and said, we got your back, and then 2 days later backed up from it. Give me a break. Not the way it is. We need to be prepared to stand up and defend our allies. And, of course, the expression from Vietnam was, well, if we don't fight the enemy overseas, we're going to fight them at home. This, I'm afraid, is exactly correct. And the biggest battle we face is an uninformed electorate, and those that are informed seem to be blessed or cursed with short memories. Our strength internationally through our military will determine the rest of the world's reaction. We are the pace setter for the world. Their government should come up to our government for standards of excellence. We don't need to look to Europe for decisions in the judiciary, which has been quoted twice, may I point out. This is fallacy, stupidity, and I don't mind telling it like it is. If you haven't noticed already, yes, I do have a big mouth, and I am not politically correct. These good people can't see what I look like, but I'll never be on the cover of GQ magazine. But there will be no mistaking my intent on any issue we discuss. Unequivocally, unashamedly, and unabashedly, I will state the way I will vote. And if people don't like it, that's okay with me. This is a great country. I shook the hands of somebody that, when I was getting my petition drive organized, this lady took that thing back, says, I'm not going to sign your position. I'm not going to vote for you. I said, dear lady, that's wonderful. Her reason? I was too aggressive. I said, stop and look at Washington, D.C. What's missing? Everybody's politically correct. They all want the next election. I care less about the next election. Let's tell it like it is. People need embarrassing, embarrass them. But let's get to American people, the little guys, the cops, the firefighters, the teachers. Let's get to carpenters, the plumbers, the shopkeepers, the little Jiffy, I started to say Jiffy Johns, the little whatever, Jiffy Lubes and Subway sandwiches. Let's get the little people involved and knowledgeable, and you can't do it with lies, double talk, and innuendo. You got to tell it like it is. That is my gift to the American people, and that's why you and everybody you know that hears this needs to stand up and get the word out. Hey, we got a candidate for Congress here who doesn't care what anybody thinks. This is how it is. That's the way he votes.
Have you been able to? I guess I talked about this a little bit, campaigning down there, or have you had any kind of time to address these to Mr. Johnson and your
good
other
God,
running
Jeb,
mate?
I love you. I went up to Muhammad just last week to speak at a candidates forum, but did not find out till I was coming down the ramp from my what do we call them now? Frenemies? Frenemies are friends who are also our political enemies. So he's a frenemy, and I love him dearly. I had a chance. He called me and says, Frank, for God's sakes, turn around and come back. I said, I'm already there. He said, oh, well, they canceled it. Now, that candidates forum will be the 15th of March. Anybody is invited. Come on out and see what I look like. Tell me to my face you think I'm a fool or you really like what I got to say. I don't care which. But come on out. Get involved. That's the whole thing, people. Get involved. Okay, campaigning downstate, I gave my first actual political speech, and believe it or not, I asked to be last. Mr. Johnson couldn't make it, but I asked to be last. And when I stood up, it happened I was dressed like this with my hard hat in my hand, and I glared at the people. And I said, never, 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 never. What you can't tell is I'm pointing all around a protected audience here. Never quit. That was the verbatim speech of Winston Churchill to the graduating class in the very dark, dismal days of 1942. And as you know, I can't remember now whether it was Yale or Oxford. Not that I was there. I mean, Oxford or Eton. But that's their great cauldron for developing their political leaders of the next generation of society. That's what they needed to hear. Don't quit, period. That's all they needed to hear. That's all he said. And that'll go down the annals of history as the shortest political speech ever given anywhere. And that's how I started my campaign speech down there. And I said, gentlemen, we and ladies, we are in exactly that position today. We can't quit on this government. I'm here to tell you I pledge my life, my fortune, and my sacred honor, just like our forefathers of old. And that's exactly where I stand. If I got to put Kevlar on by the time I get discussing these issues on the halls of Congress, I don't care. I've lived a good life, and there is nothing greater a man can do than to give his life for his country. Now, I'm not like, remember George Patton addressing the troops when he took over North Africa and said, men, you're not out here to die for your country. You're out here to make those other poor sons of bitches die for their country. Fact. I'm not here to die for my country, but I'm here to give every bit I can to saving this country, turning it back again to the Christian heritage of this great nation where families reign supreme and the president kept his place and Congress had the nerve to stand up and stop him when he got out of line, which they have done in the past. We've had presidents stopped and the Supreme Court too. Great system of government. I can't improve on it except to say, let's live it and practice it.
Well, what else? Anything else you want to add about political gridlock or something else that? Because we're at like nearly half an hour here. But anything else you want to
Do you
throw
see
in?
Why I grieve that I couldn't get on air live for 1 hour?
Yeah, well, but,
I was
yeah,
late.
And,
it was my
any
fault.
Other issues that you want to touch on in the last couple minutes here? I got plenty of things I could use for sound bites, but
or
I'm sorry.
Play the whole thing if you want.
Well, yeah, well, we play more online. But anyway,
I mean, if someone doesn't understand where I'm coming from, my personal history, how I was so turned off to this country, I quit the university and said the hell with everything and everybody. If they don't understand that and how Vietnam turned me, I will say one more thing.
Yeah,
Winston Churchill, back in World War One days. See if I get this right. There's nothing quite so exhilarating in this lifetime as being shot at and missed. Winston Churchill also made this statement. I have it recorded on my business cards. I'm going to have to take it from the top here. Winston Churchill, on my his famous quote that I dearly, dearly love, was this: if a man is not a liberal by age 21, he has no heart. However, if that same man is not a conservative by age 40, he has no brain. That is my stance on liberal conservatives. I will accept votes from liberals, from conservatives, liberals who saw the error of their ways, from conservatives and independents. May I point out, Illinois, to its credit, is one of the very few states where a good union iron worker, a rabid, fungus-mouthed Democrat, can walk into the polling place and demand and get a Republican ballot so he can vote for me. I was told right here in Champaign six weeks ago by a construction site superintendent, boy, I'll vote for you. You iron workers got one reputation besides your big mouth. You get the job done, period. Doesn't matter what the obstacles are, who's opposing you, you get the job done. That's what I want to do for my state and my country, get the job done.
Well, maybe mention health care quick. I mean, you talked about your situation,
of course,
with your wife
care.
And the cost of, Medicare reform or anything else you want to throw in about there.
Thank you so much again for asking that. I am totally opposed, unequivocally, unashamedly, unabashedly opposed to Obamacare as it is written. Not only is it a pack of lies, it's way too controlling. It is a federal executive branch seizure of a part of American life that belongs to the states, period. My wife is handicapped. I personally have some physical challenges I'm not going to discuss here. And I just go to the VA hospitals myself, and personally, I think they're doing a great job. There's the good, the bad, the ugly, and different in every aspect of American life. The VA hospitals are doing fine. I think health care belongs in the purview of the states. I'm not suggesting any changes to Social Security, and I will not work for any changes to Social Security. But I will work for getting back to the states, including health care and education, all aspects that belong to the states. And then when we trimmed our budgets back at the federal level, we can return this country to full employment. As it's headed now, it's not going to get better. I'm sorry. Wake up, people.
Talk about maybe mention the Tea Party and maybe the base of support you have there.
Yes. I have the support privately of virtually all Tea Party members, even those I have not yet. There are many I have not yet met. I am pro-Second Amendment all the way. I choose to use that terminology rather than pro-gun, but I am pro-Second Amendment, pro all of the amendments, especially the free speech aspect. The Tea Party represents nationally, state, and locally those ideals for which I'm willing to lay down my life if that becomes necessary. I'm not a radical. I'm just terribly distressed. And neither party is standing up to be counted, with notable exceptions. King from Iowa, Pence from Indiana, the brand new guy down there in Broward County, Florida, may I point out, Lieutenant Colonel Al West. The other side of the river, Todd Akin, John Shamkus. We've got some good statesmen here. But even they could stand up and be counted a little stronger. Stop worrying about the next election and start worrying about the next generation. We're running out of time. But I'm not black and dismal. I'll give you one fact of American history before I close. In fact, I'll couch in a question. $100 bill to your favorite charity, if you can answer this. What was it? Quoting the American Historical Society as a source here. What was the percentage of the American men and boys that picked up the muskets and fired the shots that won that little conflict known on the other side of the oceans, that damned revolution, rebellion? But on this side of the river is our great war for independence. Rephrasing for clarity, what was the percentage of the male population of 13 colonies that did stand up, be counted, and did something about it? fought. What was the percentage?
I couldn't tell.
Do you know, I have no one. Well, I had one person guess real close. It turned out he was a history major. According to the American Historical Society, I'm glad you're sitting down. I hate to see you fall over with that headset on. According to them, it was only 7.84% that did the actual fighting. And do you realize that included people as young as Andy Jackson, aged 14, taken prisoner of war by the British, for crying out loud. Brother, age 16. Okay? And that included the old grandpas, including that preacher with white hair that stormed after delivering a fantastic lecture about the joy of God and the Bible in the hearts of all men, took off his black frock, threw it down on the stage, and walked out in a Revolutionary War major's uniform, said, "All you good men, follow me. Now we're going to fight for this nation."